you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we're discussing weird friendship situations. How do you deal with that friend who's problematic? How do you know when it's time to end a friendship? And how do you do it? To help us with this tricky topic, we spoke with Miriam Kirmayr, a clinical psychologist who's been researching the science of friendships for nearly a decade.
One of the things that makes our friendships so powerful and important and so strongly linked with our sense of well-being and mental health is the fact that they're voluntary. And so what that means is that friends do have to choose on an ongoing daily basis to remain involved in each other's lives and to stay connected in that way.
We asked you to send your friendship dilemmas for Dr. Kirmayr, so she'll be answering some of your questions as well. Thanks to everyone who wrote to us with stories of their friendship problems.
Hey, Alice.
Yes, Melissa.
Tell me about a friendship that went south.
You know, I have so many of these. I've been thinking about this just because of the topic of the podcast, and there's a bunch.
Yeah?
There's a whole bunch.
Did you have to end any?
Yes. Yes, I did. I have to say, it's a couple I'm not proud of. I've ghosted people.
Oh, tell me about one that you really botched.
Really regret?
Yeah.
I had a friend I worked with. And when I met my husband through work, and she actually introduced us, and something started to go south in our relationship when Scott and I became close. I think she was jealous. There was a weird dynamic going on. She started to make really nasty comments about Scott with me, and it was weird. And when we got engaged, it really went south. So I kind of ghosted her. I just stopped responding to her phone calls and her emails, and by that point, we weren't working together anymore.
Right.
So it was easy to kind of get my distance from her. And I kind of iced her out.
I mean, she sounds like someone you definitely wouldn't want as you embarked on this new chapter in your life to be a very large part of that life.
It's true, but I do think, like, you know, looking back on it, I would have felt better if I had just shot her an email or called her and told her what was going on. I'm not sure she would have been receptive, but at the very least, I would feel less awkward when I run into her, which I have done several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You think she knows why?
I don't think she has a clue. I don't think she has a single clue. You know, I could have been better. Now tell me about your friendship that went south. Let's hear it.
I have never had a friendship go bad.
Really?
No, I'm sure I have. I had a friend who I adored. I thought she was fantastic. She was so talented. She was a really talented writer. And she became really successful. And during the time that she became successful, I mean like wildly successful, think about whatever field you're in and think about the highest accolade you could receive in that field. We're talking that, like, it was just like good fortune smiled upon her. And, you know, her talent was recognized, as so infrequently happens. But when it does, you know, it couldn't happen to a more talented, more worthy individual. And when I think about it now, I think, oh, I must have stopped being friends with her because I was jealous. Because that's an easy way to kind of put the blame on me and to, you know, acknowledge a very human emotion. But really, I don't know if that was the case. I think it may be that I was so self-absorbed that I just kind of missed what was going on with her. And in this particular time in my life, I was so concentrated on me. And she just kind of like sailed past, mm-hmm. You know, like her life like sped up a lot and things became quite different for her. And so I just sort of like lost her. And when I tried to rekindle the friendship later, I felt really awkward about it. I felt like it could appear that I was trying to, like, become friends with her because I wanted a bit of the stardust that had been sprinkled on her life, which, sure, that would be lovely. But, you know, that wasn't my reason, obviously, for getting in touch with her, wanting to rekindle our friendship. It was that I missed her, and I missed the human who I had had this relationship with. And I think I kind of botched it. You know, as I'm saying this out loud, I'm like, maybe I had to have been jealous. I mean, how could I not have been?
But I do think that's so tricky when you've got a friend who suddenly catapults past you, and then suddenly you've got to talk to their assistant to get in touch with them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, their schedule has to be scheduled out 6 months in advance. And it's a weird, weird thing. I can relate to that.
Yeah. And I think in general, when a friendship lies dormant, or you let it go, or you spend time away from somebody, getting back in with them is tricky. You know, rekindling that friendship, it can be problematic, not necessarily because they've become so successful, but there's so much water under the bridge that it can be very hard to kind of step back into the stream and figure out where that person is now and what their life looks like and how you fit into it.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Well, let's ask Dr. Kirmayr about it.
Definitely.
And now it's time for the interview. Our guest this week is clinical psychologist Miriam Kirmayr. Beyond researching the science of friendship, Miriam also writes a column for Psychology Today called Casual to Close, and is consulted regularly for such publications as The New York Times, The Atlantic, Forbes, and Time magazine.
Miriam chatted with me and Lifehacker managing editor Virginia Smith about how to manage difficult friendship situations, as well as answer some questions from you, our listeners, and Lifehacker readers. Thanks to everyone who wrote in. We couldn't get to all of you, but we sure tried. So, Miriam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, what led you to become a friendship expert?
It was, I would say, a mix of various personal and professional experiences. I've always been interested in relationships, and I've always done a lot of research in the area of relationships more broadly. So my first research projects were actually looking at lie telling in children and kind of the development of deception. And so looking at that, and then I also went on to study bullying and relational aggression, which is kind of the mean girls phenomenon. That kind of led me to think about the different types of interpersonal processes that happen in the context of close relationships. And as I started to kind of look into this work, I realized that we really don't know that much about friendships, especially when it comes to our friendships as adults and young adults, whereas we know quite a bit about friendships for younger children and teens, both in the world of research and also just in terms of how we think and talk about them in our everyday lives. And so seeing that this was kind of an area that was really lacking was exciting to me in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I started to do my graduate research in that area, helping others to both make and keep close friends. And then from there, started working with the media more broadly to try and share kind of evidence-based information about how we can navigate common challenges that come up in our friendships as adults.
I think that's such an interesting point because, as you mentioned, there's not that much research into adult friendships. And I think culturally, we sort of have at least a general blueprint of what a romantic relationship should look like, what the trajectory of that looks like. And we don't have that at all for friendships.
Absolutely. That's very true in terms of experiences like making friends or dating. And certainly, you know, a lot of what I hear and again, from personal experience is that making friends can feel a lot like dating, but we don't necessarily talk about how awkward or uncomfortable it can be, or just how difficult it can be to meet like-minded people. And I think that's even more true when we talk about ending a friendship, because for the most part, the norms or the etiquette about how to end a romantic relationship, that's quite clear. There are very clear expectations about what we should or should not do, whereas we don't have those same ideas or expectations necessarily about our friendships.
We actually asked our audience for questions, which we're going to get to, but I was really struck reading them about just how much pain there seems to be in these problems people have with their friendships.
Yeah, relationship difficulties of any kind are very strongly linked with our mental health and well-being. So we see that having conflict or ongoing difficulty in our relationships with friends, partners, family members, that really can take a toll on our well-being. There is something unique about our friendships. And I've said this time and time again, but one of the things that makes our friendships so powerful and important and so strongly linked with our sense of well-being and mental health is the fact that they're voluntary. So unlike our relationships with our partners or our family members, where there is the expectation that to some extent we have to stay involved in each other's lives, we don't see that same expectation when it comes to our friendships. And so what that means is that friends do have to choose on an ongoing daily basis to remain involved in each other's lives and to stay connected in that way. And that's why we can feel so close to friends and why kind of the validation and support that we get from our friends is so meaningful. But it's also why when they come to an end or when we struggle in our friendships, it can be so devastating and really, really hurtful.
So how do you know when a friendship isn't working?
There are lots of different ways to look at this. So I would say, you know, the first three main reasons why friendships end. The first would be because of some kind of big betrayal where the trust in your friendship has been kind of irreparably damaged or shattered. I would say that actually tends to be the least common reason why friendships end. More common would be kind of an accumulation of smaller conflicts or difficulties that build up over time, especially when the same issue happens over and over again. So, for example, a friend who is inconsistent in the way they treat us, they're up and down, they're unreliable in some way. So they're canceling plans last minute. They're not showing an interest. When we see these kind of small difficulties build up over time, what often ends up being kind of the, you know, the last straw is this idea of there is no openness to change or feedback. And so when we've communicated to our friends that this is bothering us, that this is hurtful in some way, and when our friends continue to behave in a certain way, that can really signal the end of a friendship, because at that point, it's not just about the initial conflict, it's about kind of this bigger lack of respect. I would say, though, that the most common reason why friendships end is this gradual growing apart, that obviously as we age and as we move through life and we enter different life stages and we have different experiences, our needs and our values and our perspectives can change. And obviously that's happening at the same time for our friends. And so we can end up in places where we aren't able to connect as we used to because of kind of practical concerns or barriers, or we just we don't have much in common anymore.
I think that point about the slow accumulation of small grievances is a really good one. And in my own life, in these situations, I feel like I've hit a wall very quickly and decided immediately that I'm done. But that's maybe not the most thoughtful way to go about something so major. What are some questions that people should ask themselves before deciding whether it's time to start breaking off a friendship?
So I would say there are actually five key questions that I like to encourage people to think about. The first is that this conflict, this ongoing difficulty, is it coming at the expense of my own well-being, values, or relationship? So that's kind of the core question. I also, though, encourage people to think about, is this kind of a short-term or a more chronic pattern? Because certainly throwing in the towel when you've had one or two difficulties doesn't necessarily always make sense. And because our friendships are so intimate and close, there are bound to be ups and downs, and conflict is inevitable in any close relationship. And so you really want to kind of take this more longitudinal approach or perspective to the situation and think, on the whole, is this working for me? Do I feel as though this is problematic or draining in some way? The next question is, we really want to think about, do the positives outweigh the negatives? And this is interesting because there's been a number of researchers or clinicians who have tried to kind of quantify this in terms of how many positive experiences should we be having in our relationships, knowing that conflict is inevitable. This idea of a 5-to-1 ratio has been put out there. So for every 5 positive experiences we have, we can have 1 negative experience or conflict. And that seems to be kind of the balance that we should aim for or strike in our relationships. My guess, though, is that this is kind of overly simplistic and that there's a lot of individual or even situational variability. So if you're going through a difficult time in your life or your friend is, that is bound to be off. And that's why it also helps to kind of adopt that more longitudinal perspective. And the reality is we also have more tolerance for certain friends or certain friendships over others for different reasons. The last two questions that I always encourage people to ask is, are both people invested? Because in order for a friendship to survive and not only survive but thrive, both members of that friendship dyad have to be invested in seeing it continue. And then finally, and this is the most kind of simple question to ask, but it's the one where a lot of people commonly struggle, have you actually communicated what's bothering you? And have you communicated clearly? And have you communicated outside the context of an argument or a conflict? Because sometimes the only time where we feel as though we can kind of muster up the courage to say something is in the middle of a conflict. And really, our messages aren't necessarily going to be heard as well in those situations.
Right. So let's say you've asked yourself these questions and you've decided it's time to end the friendship. How do you do it in a way that's kind and respectful?
This is the million-dollar question. And I'm sure, you know, you and your listeners will be disappointed to know that there's no one right way to go about this. It really is a matter of who you are, who your friend is, your friendship history, the reason for this breakup, in a sense. All of those factors will really determine kind of the right way or the most comfortable way to approach a situation. At one end of the spectrum, we have this idea of kind of ending a friendship outright, whether that's ghosting or having kind of a frank discussion where you communicate that this is going to be the end. This is one of those areas where I think friendships really do differ from romantic relationships, because when we talk about dating and romantic partnerships, we want generally that kind of closure. We want to have that explicit discussion where we have clarity on the fact that we are, in a sense, breaking up. Whereas when it comes to our friendships, that isn't necessarily always the case. It's certainly not expected. That's not how it often happens. And sometimes that's also not how it needs to happen. So what I tend to see more often are situations where individuals start to create a bit of distance bit by bit. So for example, they're not calling as often. This can be a helpful strategy for lack of a better term, kind of phasing a friendship out in a way where hopefully both people are on the same page. But it can sometimes also be a strategy to encourage somebody else to re-engage, particularly when the balance is off. Sometimes pulling back a little bit sends a message to somebody that something's off, or we're hoping to see kind of some effort from their end. And then the other strategy would be to kind of change the terms of the friendship in some way. So set limits or boundaries on the kinds of conversations that you have, the kinds of activities that you do together. Sometimes that type of a shift is the very thing that allows us to kind of hold on to or preserve the healthier aspects of our friendship. And that can obviously be helpful when there are mutual friends involved as well.
And is that something you tell them explicitly, or do you just kind of set these boundaries in your mind and behave accordingly?
It's a good question. I would say that really depends as well. Sometimes there's a shared understanding and these things can happen quite organically, and that works well. Other times, though, people pick up on the fact that one person's pulling away or isn't investing as much, and that can be incredibly hurtful. And so I do think it's helpful, kind of regardless of the route you choose, to have some kind of a conversation or communication about what's going on. And it doesn't have to be a situation where you're laying it all out there. I think that those tend to backfire. So as much as possible, it helps to kind of use the type of language that we talk a lot about in terms of conflict management. So not blaming a friend, using I statements as opposed to you've done something terribly wrong, or you're not doing enough of this. Framing it as I'm in a place where this is important to me, or I'm in a place where I'm looking for kind of more reciprocity, or whatever it is. Using that kind of language can be helpful.
And how do you navigate that if you've done all this work, you've distanced yourself, you made your needs known and kind of broken things off, but you still have a ton of friends in common that you maybe see all the time?
So again, I think I'm going to come back to this statement for basically every question you ask me, but it depends. There is not necessarily one right way to handle it. It can be a bit more delicate, obviously, because you are going to be in a position where you'll potentially see each other, or at the very least where you don't want mutual friends to feel like they're stuck or caught in the middle. And so sometimes the conversation that needs to be had isn't just acknowledging that this friendship is coming to an end in some way, but also what that means practically. For some people, that might mean never seeing or speaking to each other again. Again, that tends to be actually less common than seeing each other in group settings or at birthday parties or special events or shared celebrations. And so having a discussion about the fact that you will see each other, that's totally okay, that you're comfortable with that, that you're happy to keep in touch in that way or not, or having a discussion that, you know, this is going to be difficult and painful and it's going to be hard for both of us, but we're committed to being civil and making it as comfortable as possible for ourselves and our friends.
As I mentioned, we received tons and tons of questions from readers, so we really want to get to those. How does that sound? You ready?
That's great.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So the first one says, how do I handle a former best friend who actively excludes my partner from things? It's clear she doesn't like him.
My first piece of advice for any situation where we're feeling like our friends aren't respecting our needs or our situation or our significant others is to question, have you said something? Have you shared that this is hurting you? And not just that this is something that you're upset with, but the why. So often when we kind of communicate about difficult situations, we're very quick to just throw it out there and expect that the people closest to us understand the reasoning behind why it's hurtful. But giving them a little bit of a glimpse into why this is painful can help people to perspective take, which ultimately leads to more productive conversations and the kinds of conversations that are likely to elicit not just solutions, but a sense of closeness in the relationship. So I would encourage people to kind of ask their friends what's going on, share why it's important, and also potentially share a few solutions yourself. Would it be helpful if I organized an event? Can we host it at our place? The other piece of this, though, that I often like to share is that sometimes the difficulty has nothing to do with the partner that's involved. And what I mean by that is sometimes our friends are reacting to changes in us in terms of how we are when there's somebody else there. So it's not uncommon, for example, to hear that one friend's upset with the partner of another friend or that they don't want them around. But when you dig a bit deeper, what comes out is that what they're really missing is just the closeness that they have with you. And that when there are other people around, you don't necessarily get to have that same kind of closeness. So in those situations, the best solution is also to prioritize quality time as a friendship.
That actually, we had a question that is the exact opposite of the last one, and it's what you were just talking about, which is, we love our friend, but it's hard to be around her husband, and we're even starting to see some of his bad behavior rub off on her. What should we do? What do you do if your friend marries a jerk?
This is tough, right? I would encourage people to communicate how important the friendship is to them and to not necessarily frame it from the perspective of there's something wrong with your partner and your partner's a jerk, but more so, I miss you and I miss the way we used to be. And can we find time to do the kinds of activities that we used to do together? That's really important to me. This might be one of those situations where honesty actually is not the best policy. And people have different, obviously, opinions about that. But laying it all out there isn't necessarily going to be helpful. The caveat to this can obviously be if you feel like your friend is in a situation where they're not safe or where there's something that's going on that's just not okay. In those situations, it might be more important to be direct. But if this is a situation where just kind of this isn't somebody you would choose for yourself, or this isn't the kind of person that you envisioned your friend being with, you know, the best thing to do is to compartmentalize in a sense and find ways to preserve the aspects of your friendship that are working.
So focus on the positive.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. Okay, next question. How do you deal with a friend who's competitive with you or you feel competitive with them without the friendship becoming toxic?
So this is definitely one of those dynamics that can come up in everyday friendships. And that, you know, I'm not sure I'd go all the way to saying that this is toxic, although it certainly can get to that level. But I think that there can be an element of competitiveness in a lot of different friendships and relationships for that matter more broadly. One of the best strategies in this situation can actually be to show your support. So sometimes that type of competitiveness or one-upmanship comes from a place of insecurity. And so, you know, instead of fighting fire with fire, take a step back and validate your friend's strengths and point them out and help them to feel that kind of security and frankly do the same thing for yourself so that you're not engaged in this kind of competition that is coming from that place of insecurity. It can also help to sometimes label the process and to frame it as a dynamic. So instead of saying, you're so competitive, stop competing with me, it can help to say something like, you know, I notice that we tend to get competitive with each other when we're talking about these kinds of things. How can we team up and better support each other? So framing it as this is something that you both do together, you're in this together, and how can you use this as an opportunity to support each other and to help each other reach your own goals? Sometimes, again, there might be the need to set limits on the kinds of things that you choose to discuss or do together. But at the end of the day, showing your friend that kind of validation and also making sure that you yourself are feeling supported, whether that's by yourself or by other close friends, that can help to take the edge off.
So the next one is long, but we got so many questions that were almost the exact same thing. And he says, I'm 38 years old, and I think my body is made up of friendship Teflon. I try to befriend coworkers, and they are not interested. I've tried meeting with people I've encountered first online, but they don't want to talk again after we meet in person. I've never been invited to a housewarming, a dinner party, a baby shower, or even a wedding. I'll be 40 in a couple of years, and I don't have any friends in my corner whatsoever. I've tried making friends in all sorts of ways, going to meetups, joining new groups, indulging my hobbies, etc., and nothing works. I find I'm putting in all the work towards maintaining a friendship. When I do that, I usually stop to see if the other person will pick up the slack. They never do, and then I've just lost a friend, and I'm back at square one.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like it's this bigger question of how do I actually make friends as I get older, which is again, one of these big questions that comes up a lot because we frankly aren't talking about this enough. We're not talking about it from a practical perspective, and we're certainly not talking about it from an emotional perspective in terms of the heartache that this can bring. My first piece of advice here, above and beyond the practical component of what we should actually do, is to normalize it. So the reality is, it is hard to make friends, regardless of how old we are. And the older we get, the more difficult it can be. So I would normalize that. Yeah, that is a difficult situation.
To that end, just as far as normalizing it, I would say at least half the questions we got were some variation of, how do I make friends as an adult?
Right, yeah. And I shouldn't say I'm glad to hear that, but I'm glad that people are submitting those kinds of questions and are recognizing that this is a challenge. And hopefully, the more people talk about it, the more normalized it will be. Because we don't talk about it so much, there can be an incredible sense of shame for many people in terms of how difficult it can be to make friends. And people are very, people can often personalize it and interpret this as, there's something wrong with me. And I think that kind of self-talk is obviously very painful, but it's also very difficult because being hard on ourselves and being critical in that way isn't motivating. And if anything, it makes it that much more difficult to put ourselves out there. And so that's kind of the second piece, is not just normalize it, but watch yourself talk and take a listen to how it is that you're speaking to yourself and question, is this the way that I would speak to a good friend? Or is this the way that I wish that one of my close friends would speak to me? Because the harder we are on ourselves, the more difficult it's going to be to step outside of our comfort zone. And really, that is what it takes. So, you know, I recognize that this particular question, this person, it sounds like they've done quite a bit to meet new people. But for those who haven't, that really is the first step. It's being intentional with putting yourself out there, pursuing different kinds of activities where you know that you'll meet new people and ideally people that you share something in common with, because that kind of similarity is often the root of friendship. And having another reason for being somewhere, like learning a new language or a new skill, can make it a lot easier to approach somebody because it takes the pressure off having to. So it's kind of this backwards experience. Volunteering is also another great way to meet new people and have this kind of shared experience. It can also help to turn acquaintances or colleagues even into friends and to kind of build slowly or gradually. And then in terms of meeting people, you know, the other big point is that it's okay to be set up. So we can reach out to our mutual friends, family members, colleagues, and let them know that we're looking to connect with new people. And that can feel scary in many ways, but often the reaction of the people around us is incredibly supportive, and they're really excited about the opportunity to set us up or connect us with somebody that they know. So that's kind of one piece of the puzzle, is how do we meet new people? Obviously, there's the second step of what do we actually say or do to connect with people? And that's where things like self-disclosing and sharing information, but sharing it gradually. So starting to open up about things outside of the activity. What did you do on your weekend? What do you do for work? What are the experiences that you've had that you're passionate about? Where have you traveled to? What are your values or perspectives on current life events? These are the kinds of conversations that allow us to build closeness and trust over time. But obviously, that only works when it's reciprocal, or when both people are involved in this kind of give and take.
Following up on that, is there a right way to say to someone, I want to be your friend, or I'm looking for new friends? A part of this question that I didn't even get to was this person saying they've made it clear to people that they're looking for new friends and they get a bad response from that.
That's interesting. I think it probably, again, depends, in the sense that sometimes people are very receptive to that and saying, and you know, this is true, especially for people who are new parents, for example, on the playground. People can be very receptive to this idea of, you know, this is tough, and I'm looking for people to share this experience with. I'm looking for a new friend. Can we get together? Can we get our kids together for a play date? That kind of thing can work sometimes. It can also sometimes be experienced as a little bit too much too quickly. That can be very personal in terms of how people experience that. And so sometimes the safer option is to, as I said, kind of share bits of information about yourself that communicate that you're interested in this person and that you trust this person without laying everything out there right away.
Okay, so next question. My friend asked for advice on how to get ahead at work, and I was honest with him. I told him he had to be more assertive and dress more professionally. He took offense at my feedback and has not contacted me since. I miss his company and have reached out several times, but he simply refuses to acknowledge any communication. I'm not really sure how to fix the situation or if I should try. I miss him.
Yeah. So this is kind of the whole idea of exchanging advice and whether the advice is solicited or unsolicited. And that can be very tricky. Here, it's made even more difficult, it seems, because initially the support or the advice was requested. I will say that a common experience in friendships is when our friend is struggling in some way, when they're in pain, when they come to us and we feel as though they're looking for support, it can be very tempting to jump in with advice or with kind of a solution or with practical tips on how they should handle the situation. And obviously this is coming from a place of wanting to help and wanting to support our friends. The problem is when a friend is really struggling, that isn't necessarily what they need. And what they really are looking for, whether they know it or not, is somebody who can kind of hold space for their pain and for their discomfort. And so oftentimes the most helpful type of support is actually saying or doing very little, is just being with a friend, communicating non-verbally even that you're listening and letting them know, I'm here, I see this is difficult. How would you like me to support you? That can also really help. Checking in with friends ahead of time and saying, are you looking for advice here? Do you want me to just listen? Let me know how I can help. And then also checking back in after you have given advice or if you have supported them. How did that feel? Does that feel like it's realistic? Is that what you need? Those kinds of conversations can be very helpful because they make it more likely that there's going to be an appropriate match between the kind of support you're giving and the type of support that a friend really needs.
So what do you do if you've already done it, if you've already made the mistake and given the advice and the anger is there? How do you make that right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you feel as though you've made a mistake and your friend is disappointed or is hurt, it can help to own up to your behavior if you feel like that's appropriate. So apologizing and saying, I'm really sorry that, you know, what I said or what I did was not experienced as supportive. That's obviously not what I was going for. And again, being open and saying, how can I fix this now? But more importantly, what can I do moving forward? How can I better support you next time? What is it that you really need? And being open to that kind of feedback, that communicates a certain level of respect and really of interest in kind of strengthening your friendship over time that can be incredibly disarming.
Is there any way to suggest to a friend that she should consider professional help, as in a therapist?
So this is something I've actually written a bit about in past articles, because that line between friend and therapist can be blurred at times. Obviously, we tend to turn to the people closest to us, friends included, when we're going through a difficult time. And to a large extent, our friends are kind of a primary source of support for processing difficult experiences or painful feelings. The problem is when this balance is off and when one person feels as though they're not in a position to give anymore, that can really take a toll on the friendship. But it also means that the person who's looking for support is probably not getting the help that they need. And so there can be situations where suggesting that somebody seek professional help is potentially helpful. It can be delicate. So know that if this is something you decide to suggest, it might not necessarily be taken well. And that's partly because of the unfortunate ideas that society has still about what therapy means. But it can also often come from a place of feeling as though our friend is kind of pushing us aside and that they no longer are interested in or able to support us. And that's the piece that can be very difficult and painful. So as much as possible, it helps to normalize the experience of therapy, that a lot of people struggle, that obviously there's nothing wrong with this. If you yourself have been in therapy, it can help to share a bit of your experience if you're open to it, although that's obviously a personal decision. But really framing it from a place of, I see that you're in pain, know that I'm here to support you, know that I will continue to be here to support you. And I also want to make sure that you're getting the best help and the help that you really need. And have you considered seeing somebody or talking to somebody? Approaching it from a place of curiosity can, again, be disarming in some way and can help people to feel as though this is more of a conversation as opposed to a prescription.
How do you get over a best friend who ghosted you? And also, what do you do if you think you're being ghosted? Is there anything to do?
So again, as much as possible, it helps to, if you have reached out for clarity and you're just not getting that, the only thing you really have control over is your own behavior and the way that you're looking at the situation and what you're taking moving forward. So as much as possible, it helps to normalize the experience. So again, remember that changes in friendships are common, and more than that, that they're normal and expected. We can't possibly hold on to every friendship or relationship that we've ever had. It's a difficult part of life, but it's certainly normal. Be kind to yourself again. So speak to yourself the way you would a good friend. And instead of labeling yourself as a bad friend or telling yourself that you should just get over it, show yourself some self-compassion and recognize how difficult this is. It can also obviously help to focus on the people who you have around you who are there for you. So reach out to others for support, whether it's friends, family members, ideally not in a kind of gossiping way, especially if you share friends in common, but from a perspective of just kind of investing and in the people around you and showing yourself too that you do have a support system. But the other piece of this too is it can help to adopt a growth mindset. So reflect on this experience and ideally approach it from a place of what do I want to do differently moving forward? So instead of feeling powerless in this situation and feeling as though this is something that is happening to you that you have no control over, which, you know, is often the case, think about what do I want to learn from this? So can I learn something about being a better friend moving forward? How can I choose better friends moving forward? Who do I really want to spend my time with? These kinds of questions can help us to draw meaning from painful experiences and also make changes that will help us long term, as opposed to feeling as though we're stuck in the past and grieving this loss. But it is a loss. And so we do need to take time to grieve as well.
If a friendship is broken off and it doesn't seem like it was like a specific break or a clear ghosting, how do you rekindle that or start trying to pick things back up?
Yeah. So, you know, this is another part of it, which is that when we end a friendship in whatever form that takes, there's always the possibility of leaving the door slightly open. And I always say this, but just like we never expected a friendship to end, we might be really surprised at our desire or a friend's willingness to reconnect in the future. So one of the things that can be helpful if you are interested in rekindling or if you want to potentially keep that door open is to check in small ways. So for example, messaging a friend on their birthday or acknowledging kind of a big milestone or event or catching up very briefly when you see each other in public or messaging after you've seen them at a group gathering that, hey, it was nice to see you, hope all is well. Those kinds of small actions can make it easier to pick up later on in the future. So that's kind of one of the key ways that we can do that. Sometimes we also might need to have a discussion, though, about what happened. And in those cases, it's sometimes to kind of process the past and communicate that you're on the same page and want to move forward as friends or acquaintances. But sometimes the discussion also needs to be, how are things going to be different moving forward? And how can I show you that things will be different from my end? And how can I get the kind of information that I need from you that this is kind of a leap that I'm willing to take? And so again, sometimes communication really is the best policy in being open and honest.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And thanks for all the questions. That was really fun.
And now it's time for our upgrade of the week, where we talk about that one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Melissa, what's your upgrade?
So there used to be a Thai restaurant in Brooklyn called Pok Pok. It's originally from Oregon. I don't know if it still exists anywhere. I think it does in Portland, Oregon. But for some reason, it did not last in Brooklyn, even though their food was delicious.
Yeah.
But the thing that I really loved there was the water they gave you, just like the drinking water that came with the food. It had this kind of like toasted rice flavor to it. And it was so delicious. And I asked them once how they had made the water taste like that. And they said it was pandan. And pandan, for the uninitiated, is a tropical plant that is used widely in South Asian and Southeast Asian cooking. I learned that from Wikipedia. Anyway, you can buy the plant leaves or you can buy the plant, I guess, or maybe you can grow the plant. But I have tried to grow it myself, and that did not work out. But I bought a whole bunch of pandan leaves on Etsy, and you boil them the way that you would tea, and your water then has this kind of delicious aftertaste.
Huh.
and I can't stop drinking it. In fact, when I'm home, I refuse to drink water that has not been stewed with pandan leaves.
Wow.
It's quite delicious. I'm drinking more water because of it, because it's a treat.
I'm expecting you to go to work now with your pandan water.
I have brought pandan water places, not to work.
Okay.
I can't imagine making pandan water in the kitchen here.
Yeah.
But people have made crazier things.
That's true. We've seen some elaborate lunches being concocted.
Wild work kitchen.
I mean, no one would blink at pandan water.
Pandan water would be the least dramatic escapade.
Exactly.
What's your upgrade?
So as you know, it's autumn, perhaps you've heard.
Yes.
And the sun is not with us as much as it normally is.
No, it's forsaken us.
It's totally forsaken us. So I pulled out this light box that I used to use all the time for seasonal affective disorder. I just forgot that I owned it. I put it away in a closet and there it gathered dust. So I pulled it out the other day and I started using it again. And it's like the missing ingredient in my life. It has been a revelation. Every morning I bask in front of this light box. And I feel like this is what I am. I'm just an animal who needs sunlight, it turns out. I just need like a warm rock to lie on top of because I'm like so much happier. It's really insane.
Now, is it a special kind of light?
It is the SunTouch Plus Light and Ion Therapy Lamp. So it has negative ions, which blow at you while and I'm not sure if that actually does anything, while the light shoots in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. I mean, you can set a timer on it for half an hour, 15 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever you want. And it's a little like sticking your face in front of a fluorescent light. It doesn't feel like it's going to do much at the time. It's sort of harsh, but damned if it doesn't seem to work.
I have an invention.
Okay.
I think we should make a light box mm-hmm. that comes with a 10 times magnifying mirror attached.
Uh-huh.
So that while you're sitting in front of your light box, you can pluck your eyebrows.
That is a great idea.
That kind of light is important if you want to.
You can see everything.
Yes.
I think what I would end up doing is just staring at my face in horror into the magnifying mirror.
Yeah.
Because the light is unforgiving.
It would probably undo the good effects of the light box.
It would really be a roller coaster of emotions.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please, won't you rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review? It helps other people find us. And don't you want other people to find us? Do you want to hog us all to yourselves? Are you a podcast hog? No. You can also reach us by calling us at 347-687-8109 and leaving a voicemail, or write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.